This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider of audio video coverage for the five-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into the Patriots All 22 podcast powered by the CLNS Media Podcast Network. I am Evan Lazar, joined as always by Adam Kirchen, and today we are going to recap what was a pretty exciting NFL combine. It felt like at times there, Adam, it was like a track meet almost, the amount of low 40 times you have, you know, DK Metcalf, obviously Montez Sweat, but a lot of the guys that we're going to talk about tonight, I just felt like really blew the 40, especially, but some of the other drills out of the water in terms of just pure athletes in this class.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy with Metcalf and everybody. And really, every wide receiver, it seemed like,
Everyone checked the box.
Everybody checked the box. So, and we're even going to be talking about some linemen who ran really good 40s and stuff like that. So, that was interesting. And as always with the Patriots, you look at the three cone drills, and those were some very interesting ones as well. So, I think, but, you know, I don't think we come away with this too different a perspective on which positions have the most depth, right? I mean,
no.
I still feel like, you know, it's not like a great linebacker class. It's still, you know, we're still looking at, you know, a very good wide receiver class and defensive line class and stuff like that. But I'm not changed too much by the depth of the stuff, but just certain individual performances were pretty impressive.
Yeah, I changed my wide receiver rankings just a little bit, because there were some guys that are, you know, needed to check a box in the 40 or something like that for me that didn't. We'll get to one of those a little bit later on here. But I think the main thing is just, you know, you talked about the linebackers and you click it through all these linebackers and it's like, all right, these guys are flying, right? Like they're running 4.4s, 4.5s, but they're all 220, 230 pounds. Yeah. So really all these guys are like jacked up safeties at this point,
right?
Which is fine, you know, but I just think it was a nice kind of view of where the league is going, I would say,
right,
in terms of that position and specifically because we talk about it all the time, how the Patriots are going to want to draft their thumping linebacker, their Juwan Bentleys, their Dante Hightowers, those type of guys. And you look up and down the draft board for that type of guy and it's just kind of doesn't exist anymore.
No, it doesn't really exist. And, you know, like we, you know, been saying, they have their Bentley right now. He's just injured. And you know, that we texted a little bit about some of the linebackers we thought were good, but they're all 6'2", 230.
Yeah.
So, but they had good days. And so there's some day three possibilities, but like, there's not guys that you look at where you see, you know, a 6'4", 225 guy that, you know, or a 245 guy who runs that 4.55 or something like that. So there's not that typical Patriots mold linebacker that we saw this weekend.
Yeah, I think that Bill Belichick is going to have one or two choices here. It's either going to be one to kind of go with the times, you know, kind of adapt himself to what is available really at the position, which I find it hard to believe he's going to do that. You know, I think that he's going to just keep looking for the guys that fit their system and fit their mold. But we want to talk about a few of those at the top of the draft before we get into some of the, you know, quote unquote risers or sleepers that we also kind of discovered along this process. And there's four names I think that a lot of people, especially now, although I did see Daniel Jeremiah mocked Clelin Ferrell to the Patriots the other day in his second mock draft. And I just, side note, couldn't believe that Ferrell was available at 32.
Yeah.
But regardless of that, there's some names that obviously we've been talking about a lot in this process. I want to start with the tight ends, Noah Fant and TJ Hockenson, because I think what was really interesting about both of their days was that Noah Fant's workout was so good that Hockenson's workout looked bad in comparison.
Right.
But in reality, when you look at Hockenson's workout compared to the tight end class as a whole and also tight end classes of the last 20 years or so since we kind of really started digging into this data around 2003, he had an elite workout for a tight end. So it's kind of like both of these guys really did a nice job on, what was it, Saturday?
Yeah, and I think the thing about Fant is you look how big he is already and how fast he is already and just really every box you're checking at the combine, you're like, all right, this guy really sort of looks the part. And so, you know, obviously I think, you know, he talked about, you know, the blocking that he's got to work on, which is what showed up on film, but you know, you're looking at a instant impact red zone target in the NFL. So that's something that is going to be hard to turn down. So it'd just be a shock to me unless he, you know, has a really bunch of really bad interviews or something, or pro day, or, you know, whatever, right, that like he would fall all the way down to 32. But Hockenson, yeah, I mean, I still think like you can make the argument that Hockenson's the better player based on his film, but it was clear who had the better combine.
Yeah.
And sometimes that just makes a bit of a more difference with certain general managers.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's a great final point there, is that some GMs are just going to take the athlete, you know, we know that now, and it is what it is, whether you're a film guy or you're a combine measurables type guy. You know, I tend to, and I think you tend to do the same, kind of use them both in tandem to make a, you know, an evaluation, which I think is the right way of doing it. But at the same time, there's going to be GMs that put a little bit of heavier weight on the combine, on the pro day numbers, and that's also because they're seeing them in person on those days too. Whereas with the college, a lot of those GMs are watching the pro game and they're really not seeing these guys up close until they get into some of these combine events and stuff like that. I think that with Font, the thing is that from day one that he steps on the football field, he is going to be a matchup nightmare for every single defense.
Yeah, 100%.
Because there's really not a whole lot of guys that are his size that can run like him at the same time. So if you put a linebacker on him to match the physicality, he's going to run right by a linebacker. There's maybe some safeties in the league that have that kind of mix to them that have been covering tight ends, you know, kind of those hybrid guys. But those guys are hard to find too. So I think that he's really going to be a matchup issue. And really looking just over the last, you know, 5 or so years, of guys that worked out like Font did, they're not getting past 20. You know, like he's a top 20 pick, probably in the 10 to 20 range for every single year, whether it's been David Njoku or OJ Howard or some of these other guys that were just, you know, kind of in this athletic freak. I mean, Eric Ebron went top 10. Yeah. You know, like, these are the type of guys that Font is kind of in the category of. With Hockenson, I just think his film just is too good to have him last there. The biggest thing, though, is, and I think that, you know, this is kind of what was being talked about down there, is that these two guys are so good that even a team that maybe you don't think needs a tight end might just pair them with the tight end that they already have on their roster, right, because they're just such good players that you can kind of have that, you know, 1-2 punch at the tight end position and kind of work your offense around it. So don't take those guys off the board for the guys that say don't have a need at tight end, because these guys are such great players that they're going to get to a point in the draft, I would say probably around the 15th pick around there, where they're the best player on the board. Right. And it's going to just be very hard for a lot of these teams to pass up.
Right. And it really is a weapon to have good multiple tight ends on the field that can catch the ball. And if you sort of look at, you know, the Patriots have done over the years, and then if you look at even what the Ravens did last year with their tight end, it helped Lamar Jackson so much. That was the whole part of their passing game was Lamar Jackson sort of getting the ball to those tight ends, and it helped them an extremely high amount. So, you know, I think you're going to see a lot of teams go that way.
Yeah, I think that those two guys are looking like it's going to be off the board, and, you know, when the Patriots are on the clock. And with Hockenson too, one thing, you know, just stands out with him. And Font, I think, is getting kind of underrated as a blocker, because I think people want to use this in the argument against him, is that he can't block. He can block, he just doesn't finish blocks like Hockenson does.
Right.
And at Iowa, they didn't use him as kind of the focal point of the running game as a blocker. Whereas with Hockenson, a lot like what the Patriots do with Gronk, obviously not as good yet, but he was the guy that was really, he was whamming guys. He was the fullback sometimes on a few plays. Yeah. They're using him like more like a fullback. They're leading him in the blocking scheme. He's a big part of that in their game plan and their scheming, you know, centered around them knowing that Hockenson was a very good blocker, especially on the move. So I think that that's kind of where you get the Hockenson versus Font blocking argument. But I do think Font can block. I just don't think it's quite as good as what Hockenson can. All right, let's look at some of these defensive linemen. I think that that's kind of, it feels like, and of course now Belichick's going to draft a corner or something like that, yeah. But it feels like it just makes sense for it to either be a tight end or for it to be a defensive lineman at 32. And the two defensive linemen, we'll start with Dexter Lawrence out of Clemson, who is really, if he's there at 32, he is the prototype for a Bill Belichick interior defensive lineman. You know, he's big, he's powerful, he's 350 pounds. He's exactly what the Patriots are looking for. And then he went out in the 40. I know he injured himself during the run, but he ran a very impressive 40 for a guy of his size.
Yeah, and, you know, for anybody that's watched as much Clemson as anybody, really, I mean, because Clemson's been so in the middle of everything in college football, so – And he's been central to their success ever since he stepped on campus. I mean, the guy really moves the pile the other way, you know, like, and so he can be effective, you know, shooting gaps or just overcoming guys or, you know, holding multiple blockers at once. He can pretty much do whatever you want, from an interior defensive lineman standpoint. And he's a big reason why they've been so successful. I mean, obviously they've got great players everywhere at that school right now, but, you know, he's somebody that can occupy blocks and he can also, you know, get into the backfield. These, I wasn't too shocked by his combine performance because he's been, I'm pretty sure he was a five-star recruit coming out of high school. And he's just pretty much been noted as like this freak defensive lineman from the jump. So, I think he only helped himself. I really doubt he'll still be on the board by the time the Patriots pick, but you never know, you know, especially with needs and, you know, with how many other good defensive linemen there are in this class. But he really helped himself.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the biggest thing with him, and this is kind of it, what stinks about it is it's scouting based off of kind of the recent trends and not watching his tape individually, but just guys like him that have been picked in the first round. You're talking, you know, Danny Shelton's and Vita Vea's, and Vita Vea had a nice year last year, but the true nose tackles just haven't really lived up to their draft stock. You know, we know one here in New England with Malcolm Brown, who is a good player, but he's not this high impact player. And a big reason why is because we're in a passing league and these guys are run stuffers. But I think the difference with Dexter Lawrence is that if you single block Dexter Lawrence, even on a passing down, you better hope the ball is getting out quick.
Yes.
Because he doesn't have a great pass rush move. He's not this agile dude that's going to make guys miss and make blockers whiff, but he will bull rush right through you if he's single blocked. And that's a really big thing of a kind of a pocket pusher and a pocket collapser up the middle. And then against the run, I mean, you got to double team him. If you don't double team him on the inside, he's going to be a problem for you. And then if you do double team him, that obviously opens up guys, you know, to go and get the ball elsewhere. The linebackers, it keeps them free, or keeps the defensive lineman, it gives him a one-on-one someplace else. That's the kind of thing that Dexter Lawrence does. And this is exactly kind of what the Patriots defense has used that position for in the past, whether it's been Malcolm Brown or on a better version of Vince Wilfork, you know. Big Vince, what he did so well was not necessarily the fact that he registered all these tackles for loss and stuff like that. It was that he ate up blockers and he let everybody else kind of go and make the play. And he was kind of this unselfish guy. I think Dexter Lawrence has a lot of that in his game as well.
Yeah. And I think that's always going to be valuable in the sport of football. I don't care how many teams pass. He's that type, and I think the Vince Wilfork comparison is actually kind of an interesting one because that is kind of what he can bring to the table.
Yeah.
With that overwhelming presence in the middle, and that's so hard to get sometimes. If you don't have that, that can be a really, really big blind spot for your defense.
Right, and we know the suspension that happened at the college football playoff, the steroid or whatever you want to call it, suspension that popped up for him. And at the combine, you know, obviously he was asked about it during his media availability, and he's just like still kind of dumbfounded by it. He was like, he told us that he tested positive for a substance he can't even pronounce. You know, he doesn't even know what it is and where it came from or anything like that. He said, obviously, you know, it was a lesson learned in terms of being more careful of what you're putting into your body and making sure everything checks out. But this is not a guy that was like, you know, jacked up on steroids and taking HGH and stuff like that and to try to, you know, cheat the system or anything. This was a kind of a fluky type thing where he took something that obviously got, you know, pinged in the system. So I think that side of it is pretty clear that it wasn't really him. So I think the biggest thing about him falling to 32 is just going to be the position and kind of just the style of play and how there's going to be a lot of other guys that we're going to talk about a few here. And also, you know, just in general that are going to be talked about that rush the passer better than he does. And that's just going to be the stylistic difference. And one of those guys is quickly becoming my favorite pick for them at 32. And I think you agree is a Jerry Tillery from Notre Dame, who had an elite combine workout, checked all the measurables boxes. He's 6'6", over 300 pounds. He's a big, lean guy, and he moves really well. He can play inside and outside. He's a great pick.
Yeah, and I remember when he was in high school and he was coming out of Shreveport, a lot of people sort of pegged him as an offensive tackle.
Yeah,
you kind of see that he has the body. He could have been that if he sort of chose that path.
It'd have been a big offensive tackle.
Yeah, but the thing is he really moves well. He uses his arms pretty well. I think he's got much better technique than you see on guys that size who are, you know, at that position. You know, a lot of times you would think a guy who's that tall would sort of get out leveraged in certain spots, but I don't see that on film as much. I think he is a good pass rusher. I think he can hold down the point of attack. He gets to the spots on the field there where he wants to. I just think he's just somebody who can be a really effective player in the NFL for a long time, as long as he stays healthy.
Yeah, he's got that arm length, like you mentioned, and really the ability to press blockers. And he kind of has that versatility in a lot of different ways where he can play in a two-gap system and just hold blockers and, you know, get shedding one way or the other to make a tackle. But he can also one gap and he can just penetrate up the field with the best of them too. And then you can also put him at defensive end or put him inside a defensive tackle like as like a three technique. So all those things that put it together, that's the type of player that the Patriots usually love. You know, a guy that is very scheme versatile, a guy that's very alignment versatile. You can line him up basically, I would say, anywhere you want on the defensive front, and he'd probably be a pretty effective player for you. And the other thing that I just like about him is that even though I think he can hold his own in the running game, he would add a little bit of interior pass rush. Oh. You know, he'd add a guy that can kind of make some moves on the interior, gets off the ball pretty well. This is not Malcolm Brown, Dexter Lawrence territory.
No.
You know, this is a guy that can really fire off the ball, make some plays in the backfield, maybe get, you know, into that 7 to 8 sack range from an interior defensive line spot. So I think that those are all kind of music to the Patriots fans' ears. Whether Bill Belichick actually does that one of these days is another question. But I think that, you know, the couple of the other guys that are kind of like him, like a Draymond Jones from Ohio State, for example, who has that kind of lean, tall body mass type difference and has a little bit of pass rush skill, I don't think that those guys fit a two-gap system as well as Tillery does.
Yeah, and I don't know, some of the film on Tillery just blows your
mind. The Stanford game is one of the most dominant games of any prospect in this draft.
Yeah. I thought he played well against Michigan too, and you know, like I he just seems like one of those guys that you're just going to have to deal with for four quarters and scheme against for four quarters, and you're not going to, you know, he's just not somebody that you can just sort of block with one guy and forget about. You can't do that. He's somebody that is just going to be in your backfield, in your ear all day. So
you,
the more guys you can get like that, the better off your defense is.
Yeah. He had the third most quarterback pressures of any defensive lineman or defensive player in this class, according to PFF. A lot of people talking about how some of his games weren't as good as others, you know, kind of had a streaky film to him, but PFF actually has him graded out as one of the best snap to snap pass rushers in the entire class. So they don't really agree with that narrative. And one final point, just if they lose Trey Flowers in free agency, the Patriots, then this is the perfect guy to kind of take on that Trey Flowers role. I think he can really do both of the, you know, they moved Trey a lot inside last year, rushing him right up on the center, stuff like that. I think Tillery can do a lot of those same things too. All right, so we just talked about four names there at the top of the draft at 32, but the Patriots have 11 other picks besides 32, which is still crazy. But we wanted to talk about some of the combine risers or kind of the dark horses that broke out. And Adam, we each had a couple of names here that we wanted to throw out. Why don't you get us started?
Yeah, I think I'll start with another local guy that I saw a lot this year was Chris Lindstrom. Local. Not only was he played at BC, he played at Shepherd Hill Regional in Dudley, Mass. You know, ran a 4.91 40 at what, 310 pounds?
Yeah, super athletic.
Yeah, and that's kind of what he was even coming out of high school. He was a very overlooked recruit because I think at the start of his senior year he was only 6'4", like 235, and BC said, all right, we got a great athlete here, we can pump him up, get him bigger and not lose his speed. And that's exactly what he did. And if you look at the film at BC, you know, they run a lot of power, they run a lot of pulling guards, and you know, they would, you know, run AJ Dillon behind him when he pulls a lot. He's so good at getting to the second level, finding a moving target and taking him out of the play. He's just such a consistent player. He's good in pass protection. I don't know what the exact number is, but he gave up a startlingly low amount of pressures this year. The guy's consistent. He's smart. He's a good athlete. I think he's one of those guys where, you know, even though you got the Patriots have their guys on the interior of the defensive line, you can never have enough good interior defensive linemen or offensive linemen. And so I think that's what he'll be a consistent NFL performer for a long time. That's just his makeup. That's just his athletic traits too. He's to me a very safe pick.
Yeah, I agree completely. And this is a complete Patriots pick. Like through and through, this guy, great tester, great head on his shoulders. They look, especially in the interior of the offensive line, you look right down the board there, Shaq Mason, David Andrews, Joe Tooney, especially Mason and Tooney, are great athletes. You know, they ask those guys a lot of the time to make blocks on the move, make blocks at the second level, to pull, to get out in front of screens, all these kinds of things. And they need athletic offensive linemen in the Patriots system. That's just what they've always been and what they've always looked for. And Lindstrom is definitely that. He is a guy that, though, I think is probably a little bit better of a run blocker right now, which isn't an issue. You know, he's just a very good run blocker. And down at the Senior Bowl, he was one of the best offensive linemen down there by a lot of accounts. So he's a guy that I think is now probably squarely in the second round conversation. I don't really see him getting out of the second round. He's a really good, sound player. And Daniel Jeremiah on the broadcast was just saying the entire time that Lindstrom was working out to just give him a Patriots hat right now and send him to Donde Scarnecchia and just get out of the way. It just screams that. And for everybody that says, well, that's not a need and all that kind of stuff, that's somewhat true, but things change fast in the NFL. Yeah. And we know that Joe Tooney's a free agent in 2020, at the end of the 2019 season. We don't know yet if they're going to re-sign him. I hope they do, but we don't know if they're going to. And things, like I said, it gets quick, you know, and things can change just like that. You know, next thing you know, maybe David Andrews or Joe Tooney or Shaq Mason. Shaq Mason's under contract, so probably not him, but Andrews and Tooney, those guys could be gone, or those guys could be not the same players, or, you know, whatever the case may be, and it can just really change quickly. So it's never, like you said, it's never a bad thing to have plenty of offensive linemen.
Right.
And I think that Lindstrom's also the type of guy that early on in his career, they'll find a spot for him. You know, he's going to contribute, whether it's as like a sixth offensive lineman or playing in spot up duty. You know, if somebody gets injured, something like that, it's always just great to have that depth. And Bill Belichick talks about it all the time. You know, depth is like an insurance policy. You hope you don't need it, but when you need it, you're glad you have it.
Right.
And Lindstrom's like the perfect, for next year at least, insurance policy. And then, you know, a long-term starter at some point when somebody moves on or they move on from somebody to make a spot for him. I wanted to go to the wide receiver position. This guy's obviously not necessarily a sleeper by any stretch of the imagination, but I was not as high on N'Keal Harry as a lot of other people. You go to the combine and he runs in the 4.5s, which is kind of was the threshold for him. He looks pretty fast, you know, and a lot of the issues people had with him was, you know, kind of separation downfield, doing all that kind of things. Bill Belichick has never taken a wide receiver in the first round. I don't think I see him starting to do that now all of a sudden. But Harry, in terms of, you know, being there in the top 50 for them with such a need at the position, very versatile player, can play inside, outside, great after the catch, good contested catch and catch radius to him. You throw those jump balls and back shoulders and stuff like that to him as well. He checked the box at the combine. I'm still not crazy about him, but I moved him up a little bit.
Yeah, you were kind of afraid after watching his film a little bit, maybe like you'd run like a 4.6 something or something like that. But, you know, he's a big guy. He can make plays, like, you know, like you said, he's really good after the catch. Maybe you throw him in the slot there and, you know, just, you know, have him get open and make plays. You know, that's something he's certainly capable of. I think he's an interesting sort of case study with this year's class because there's so many other options.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's going to be one of those things where, you know, whether or not the Patriots fall in love with them or not, because there's a ton of really good receivers that fit sort of the Patriots mold this year. I don't see a scenario where the Patriots swing and miss on a receiver this year. If they want one, they're going to get a good one.
Really good.
There's so many good ones. And I think Harry, you know, like he just found a way to be productive in all those games last year. And so, you know, I think the combine helped him for sure.
Yeah, just talking to people down at the combine and also kind of just following what's going on Twitter, I realized that I was probably a little bit lower on Harry than pretty much everybody else. And the main thing is that, first of all, he's an analytics darling. All the analytics guys love him because his college production was just off the charts. You know, he's responsible for like half of that team's production last year on offense. So that's a big part of it. And the other thing is, you know, he admitted, I asked him point blank, I was like, you only ran like 3 routes. Like, let's be real, you ran a fade, you caught screens, and you ran, you know, little hitches and curls and stuff like that. And he said, yeah, that's true. And really the Arizona State coaching staff was the reason for it, he claims. And he says that he's really looking forward to, at the NFL level, expanding that route tree and showing everybody that he can run, you know, a bunch of different routes. And that that was just kind of the role that they wanted him to play. And I think that kind of speaks to just the kind of the battle that college coaches have with the whole process, is that, you know, at the end of the day, the college coaches need to win games.
Right.
They're not worried about developing guys as much for the NFL. That's a kind of a second fiddle thing. That's nice if they can do that because it helps them land recruits, but it's certainly not their number one priority. So a lot of guys, you know, that I've watched over the last, you know, couple of weeks or month here since the Super Bowl, a lot of these guys are like, why was that his usage? You know, why is this guy getting used like that? He's a stud. He should be used in every way possible. And a big reason is that was how the coaching staff felt it was best for them to win football games. So maybe that was the case with N'Keal Harry. Again, I don't see the Patriots taking a wide receiver at 32, but if they want to move back up into the second round with that 56th pick and package together some picks to move back up, I wouldn't be surprised if they kind of get back into the top 50 to take a player like him.
I think, you know, but it, you know, with this all, with all these wide receivers, you're looking at so many different options, like all the guys we profiled and then other guys that had good days. It's really crazy. Now you're seeing guys like Paris Campbell mocked in the first round after running that 4.31.
That kills me because he's like, he's a great player for what he is, you know, but even in today's NFL where jet sweeps and stuff like that are starting to become more prevalent, that's all he is. You know, he's not like, I think his ceiling is Percy Harvin. That's kind of like the ceiling comp that everybody has out there for him, but that's lofty. I think it's more likely like a Cordero Patterson.
Yeah.
Which is a nice player, but it's just not a first round pick.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's been interesting. It's just that, you know, that class is posted just such unreal like numbers at the combine that it, almost every guy is in play now.
Yeah. It feels like, yeah. Hey, Isabella, man.
Yeah.
He's like, he might be, if he was from a bigger school, if he went to a Power 5 school, he's a first round pick.
Right. And he almost did. I mean, like, I don't know if you saw that tweet, but there was very late in the process of his high school, you know, he was getting recruited by almost no one. And a kid from Oklahoma State decommitted. And the next guy down was going to be Isabella, but then the kid recommitted to Oklahoma State, and he ended up going to UMass. You almost wonder what would happen if a guy like Andy Isabella ends up at a place like Oklahoma State.
With that offense.
That offense, that league, you know.
Yeah. It probably puts up the same numbers, and we're talking about a first-round pick right now.
Right, 100%. And everybody knows his name a little bit better, a little bit earlier, but yeah. So it's an interesting wide receiver class, but the next guy I was talking
back about on track here
terms of risers was Miles Sanders from Penn State. Yeah. He ran that great 3 cone, and he's on the bigger side. That exactly, I think he's 5'11", 210, something like
that. Yeah,
he's a bigger guy. So now, to be honest, you know, I don't like his film as much as, say, somebody like a Trey Williams from Texas A&M. I like Williams a little bit better. I thought he was a little bit more productive against better competition. But Sanders is somebody who you can see on film use that quickness pretty effectively. He's got good vision, good balance. He's got, like, a good pace to his runs in order, you know, he doesn't just take the ball and get to top speed right away. He finds the hole and sort of maneuvers his feet well. And I think he's got, you know, a decent skill set to him. Now, I don't think, even though I did think he had a good combine, I don't think he's, you know, a spectacular athlete. You know, I don't think he's a Barkley type guy. He's, you know, he's usually when he gets free, he breaks a 20-yard run, not a 75-yard run and stuff like that. But I do think he's useful. I think, Penn State is a big RPO school right now. He blocked fairly effectively, I thought, and they used him in the passing game. They split him out wide. So he knows how to do a lot of different things. And so in a lot of respects, I think he's pretty pro ready. But as far as his ceiling, I don't know how much better he's going to be than, you know, some of the other backs in this class. But I do think he's somebody that, like, in the mid to late rounds, if you want to pick a running back, you get a Miles Sanders, and you're going to get a good solid pro in their running back by committee.
Yeah, he's a perfect running back by committee type guy, it feels like. And he, you know, I think a lot of scouts and a lot of people were saying that he thought or was trying to be too much like Saquon because he does kind of have some similarities in his running style. They're both kind of low center of gravity guys that are well built below the waist and make a lot of really nice lateral jump cuts and stuff like that. But Sanders doesn't get up to 100 miles an hour quite like Saquon does. He doesn't have that start stop or that acceleration that Saquon does. But at the same time, you know, he made a lot of guys miss.
Yeah.
You know, he makes a lot of guys miss. He runs through a lot of arm tackles. He has that low center of gravity, that lateral agility that you like to see. And he gets a lot of what is blocked too at the same time. Now, for the Patriots, my question to you was, does he remind you a little bit of Sony? Because it's not the same guy, but he's a bigger back that's going to run like a, you know, 4.5. He's not, you know, the home run hitter type back. He's a little bit more shifty, I would say, than Sony is. And Sony's more, you know, kind of just get it and go. But I wonder if they're a little bit, their roles would look too similar, to be honest.
That could be. I also think that Sony in college to me was a little bit more explosive.
Yeah. I hope that Top Gear still exists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I, you know, in a way that their build and their running styles are a little bit similar, but I don't know exactly how his usage would translate, but I think it would be like, you know, he would have to be that, you know, that passing down back that James White role that's currently used. And I think he's comfortable in that. That's kind of like, you know, what he was best at Penn State, was using that sort of full complement of skills. You never really see him come so hard downhill. So I don't know. I think he's an intriguing guy, but like based on the combine, you know, he opened my eyes a little bit more than I thought I would, but based on film, if we're going to go on film, I still like that kid from Texas A&M a lot better.
Yeah.
He really popped off to me,
Yeah. I think the good thing about Miles Sanders, you know, he moved up my board. You know, I had a guy like Elijah Holyfield ahead of him, and Elijah Holyfield goes out and runs a 4.7, and you're all of a sudden like, you're like, all right, you know, maybe we need to readjust a little bit here. Miles Sanders, obviously, Miles Sanders had that great 3-cone time too. I think that people are kind of sleeping on running back as a position that the Patriots are going to be looking at in that early day three category. I think a lot of people are kind of thinking that they're set at the running back position and don't need any more backs. I think that they could really use a fourth back, you know, obviously, in a guy that they were hoping that Jeremy Hill was going to be, but obviously he got hurt too early in the season to be that guy. And also, I mean, listen, I think Rex Burkhead's a nice player. They obviously fell in love with Rex Burkhead for some reason at the end of the last season that, like, no one's really figured out quite yet. But I think that they could upgrade over Rex Burkhead.
Right.
And maybe Miles Sanders is the type of guy that finally gets them out of the honeymoon phase with Burkhead's versatility, and is a guy that has a little bit of that versatility too, and is just probably a better, higher upside player.
Yeah, and you know, how much are you going to expect Burkhead to be healthy all the time?
Man, I don't understand their fascination with him, especially in the playoffs, because talking to Ivan Fears and some of the other coaches, the training wheels were off Sony at that point. You know, now once you get to the postseason, you get to the Super Bowl, it's whatever it takes to win is what we're going to do. And yeah, here we are with Rex Burkhead in the backfield, like 50% of the time. It made no sense.
Yeah. So I think, I think some running back pick somewhere would make sense, and Sanders would make sense, I think.
Yeah. I agree. All right. Moving on now to another great 3-cone time, David Long out of Michigan. So he is a cornerback. I hadn't done a whole lot of studying on quarterbacks before the combine. One of the Patriots' stronger position groups right now, I would say, led by, you know, obviously Gilmore and J.C. Jackson. But I pull up David Long's NFL profile the day after the combine, after he ran, or on Monday, actually. And it's J.C. Jackson. comparison. And so now we have the best 3-cone time at the combine, or at least among cornerbacks and defensive backs. Can't remember if it was the top time. And then you have the comp from Lance Zierlein being J.C. Jackson. And, you know, obviously the ears perk up and you're just like, wait a second. You know, maybe this guy could be a Patriot. He is a lot like J.C. Jackson. He's going to live in your grill. He is a press man corner. He's going to pop you in the face at the line of scrimmage and ride you all the way down the field. He's very physical. Obviously, he's got the quickness. He's got decent ball skills. He does remind you a lot of J.C., and you can never have too many guys on your team like J.C. Jackson.
Right. And I watched some more of his film after we texted about him. He's sticky, man.
He's a good player.
It's hard to create separation from this dude. He's very competitive. And I like how he gets in people's grills, right? You know, every single snap.
He's right in your face.
Yeah, I love it. So I think from that perspective, I think that's the Patriots are going to like that too. He's not the biggest corner, but I don't think it's necessarily too much of a negative on him when he's that good in man coverage. But you know, if you're going up against a guy who's 6'4", then okay, you don't play him on him.
Right.
But he's competitive. He's just got that streak to him where he just doesn't want the other guy to get the ball real bad. And that's, you want your best corners to have that real dog streak to him. So, I think, you know, he's going to be an asset for somebody. I don't know where he's going to go. But he played on a good defense at Michigan, a very aggressive style. I like what he brings to the table.
Yeah, I think that, you know, if you can't play press man, then the likelihood that you're going to get drafted by the Patriots is very slim. So there's only so many guys, and Rakyon Sin from Temple was like the guy that I really wanted to talk about, but his three cone time was just disastrous. And David Long ran almost a second faster in the three cone than Rakyon Sin did. And I really liked Yon Sin. He's a very tough guy, very in your face too. But it just that three cone, if there's one thing that you can take away from the combine, it's cornerbacks in the three cone drill for the Patriots. So whenever a guy that can play press man wins a three cone like that, it lights up for you. And I think it's the stat is since 2010, they've drafted 7 corners that have a sub-7 three cone. So basically if you run somewhere, you know, sub-7 and you're a cornerback and you play good man coverage, the Patriots have drafted you more times than not over the last, you know, decade or so. So it's a position that they obviously look at a lot in that drill. So I really like him. I think that he could be a Patriot. And all of a sudden, when you look at the cornerback spot, you know, Jason McCourty is obviously getting up there in age. Jonathan Jones is a restricted free agent. So even if he comes back next year, I think there's a good chance that he plays on that RFA tender and is maybe a regular unrestricted free agent in 2020. Obviously, you have Gilmore and J.C. Jackson kind of leading the way. But kind of like the offensive lineman in any position in this league, you can never have too many guys.
Yeah, exactly. Especially with how much teams throw the ball these days. You want as many good corners as you can, and this guy can play. I know he's probably not getting as much run as you know, from the mock guys as a lot of people, but he can really play. Please play it on good defenses, and if you got a guy who knows how to play press man, you'll find a spot for yourself in this league.
Yeah. All right. Give us your last one.
Who was my last one? I had Sanders, Lindstrom. Oh yeah, and Rapp from Taylor Rapp from
Washington. How can we forget?
Yeah. Now the reason I, you know, put him as a riser, even though he didn't run the 40, he did well in his agility drills, and he measured in or weighed in at almost 210 pounds as a safety. Now, you know, you watch the guy's film. Sometimes they line him up like 20 yards off the line of scrimmage.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, but
that was like what we were talking about earlier about what's better for the team to win games.
Right.
What's better for the player? That's a great example of that too.
Yeah, but like when he's in the box, he's so good. I love him when they choose to bring him in on blitzes because he builds up such a good head of steam. It's almost like bringing in an outside linebacker. With the thunder he brings coming in off the edge or up the middle, and like we were talking about, he doesn't miss tackles. You know, I was watching. You know, he's one of those guys that sort of erases yards after catch. You know, wherever the ball is, he sort of comes around and sort of makes the play, and a potential 40-yard catch is a 20-yard catch, or a potential, you know, 30-yard run is a 10 to 15-yard run. He takes good angles of pursuit. He's a smart player, man. Right. I think he could be the type of, you know, Patrick Chung replacement that I don't think Duke Dawson's going to be. So, so I mean, I
put it frankly.
Yeah. I'm sorry. No offense to Duke Dawson. But I feel strongly that this is like a good, smart football player. He's well built already for the NFL. And you know, some people are mocking him in that late first, early second range where he could be. So I think he'll be a good player, and you know, I think his agility testing numbers were, you know, something in line with what the Patriots would like.
Yeah, so I spent a lot of time talking to him during his availability, and the two things that stood out to me amongst a lot of good stuff that he said, but first two things just were that he emulates his game after Minka Fitzpatrick, that Minka was kind of the guy, you know, the do-it-all safety. He said he played, the second thing, you know, he said he played four different positions in that Washington defense. He played strong, he played free safety, he played nickel slot corner, and he played like a money backer, like that hybrid linebacker safety role. And he covered tight ends and slot receivers and running backs, man-to-man. He played deep. He blitzed. He played against the run really well. He just did it all for them. He really did, and he was kind of the chess piece, the queen, you know, in that back secondary, where it was like wherever we feel like we need to put him, wherever the kind of the floodgates are opening a little bit on us against a specific team, we're just going to put Taylor Rapp there, and it's going to be a wrap.
Yeah,
it's going to be over. And that was, I think, what he took a lot of pride in as a player, was kind of being that guy. Being kind of that stopper, that, okay, maybe he said he didn't play any really outside corner, so maybe that's not going to be his role, but he's going to be, you have a really good tight end, you have a running back that's killing you, you know, on passes out of the backfield, you need to play more split safety on the back end because, you know, they're killing you with big plays over the top. He can do a little bit of that. I think really the only thing that he can't do, and he can do a whole lot of other things, is maybe play center field. He might not have that kind of sideline to sideline speed to run and play as a single high safety, but you put him in split safety looks, you put him down in the box, you put him as a robber, put him at that money backer spot. Basically, we're describing Patrick Chung. So I think that a lot of those skills are very much what Rapp can do. And you watch him play man coverage against tight ends specifically, and he's very, very sticky. He's very, very difficult for those tight ends to get away from, and he's physical enough to get up in their faces and battle them at the line of scrimmage too. So he was one of the best. I would say he's one of the safest picks at 32 that they could probably make. I don't know if safety in that pick is where they go with it, but you know that he's going to be a solid NFL player. I just don't see an avenue where he is not a good at the next level, because he's just very fundamentally sound, very smart. He does, like we said, he doesn't miss tackles. He's a very good rapper. He's very good at kind of instinctively reading a running play.
He
almost like reads it like he's the running back, and he kind of knows where the blocking scheme is going to take the back, and he's very good at kind of filling those holes and knowing where the ball is going to be based off of the blocking scheme up front. He's a really, really good player. Seems like a really, really smart guy too. I'm sure he did very well in the interviews and in the whiteboard, you know, film room type stuff as well. So he's the type of player that if they drafted, whether it's at 32 or somehow they got him in the second round, whether a trade or something like that, I'd be very excited if I was a Patriots fan to have him. I, you know, obviously it's a loaded safeties room right now, but it's going to thin out pretty quickly for New England over the next couple of years. All right. I'm going to go back on the defensive line. I had three names and I really can't decide between the three that I wanted to talk to, because there's a lot of guys, I think, in this defensive line class that are one gap penetrators, that are just guys that really need to get upfield to be effective. So I've kind of been looking for some guys that maybe fit the Patriots mold a little bit more. So Rhino Ren from Arizona State is the one I'll settle on. Bull in a China shop type guy, like just absolutely destroys people in the running game. There's just film of him just throwing centers and guards, you know, on their ass. And it's pretty impressive. And the get off, the first step quickness, and upper body strength both contribute to that. He absolutely killed the combine. He's a huge guy that ran really, really well and pretty much everything. And it was just impressive. And I think that he's the type of guy that is a perfect example of somebody that might be a better pro than a college player, because in college, he really didn't have a ton of production.
No.
He had four tackles for loss and a sack all of last year. So not a big production guy, but on a down to down basis, he is extremely disruptive, and he's like kind of always creating havoc.
Yeah, that's how I'd put it too, in terms of creating havoc when you watch him, because he's not always making plays, but he's also somebody where you watch him and the other guy's going backwards, or
he just fires right off the ball.
Yeah, he's somebody you have to contend with.
Yeah,
and if you get him a little bit more, sort of focused on where the play is going to be, and and sort of fundamental technique stuff, like, you know, knowing what's happening with the offense, I feel like he'll be winning his battle, but still sort of losing the war, because he'll get sort of pushed out of the play.
He's kind of more concerned with knocking the guy on his ass at times than he is to actually find the football and make the play.
Right. So, but I think that's something you want to be able to mold Clay like that.
Yeah.
I think if he falls, and I'm sure he's not going to be a very, high pick. He's not being talked about it, at least. I think if you are waiting around and you want to take a chance on a guy like that, it's certainly, worth it, because he is such an incredible specimen like that.
Yeah, absolutely. The two other ones, I just wanted to mention their names quickly, were Tryson Hill from UCF, who in the drills, on the on-field drills themselves, moved like he was 100 pounds lighter than he was. His hip and change of direction and his hip fluidity was just tremendous. It was really cool to kind of watch a guy that big be able to do that. And just talking to some people, UCF, he fell out of favor. The coach left. The Scott Frost was like the guy that recruited him and really liked him. And when he left, the new coaching staff came in, and I guess Tryson's a pretty opinionated guy. He likes to speak his mind and say, I don't like that idea, and stuff like that. And that didn't really rub the new coaching staff the right way. He fell out of favor with the new coaching staff. All of a sudden, a really blue chip player for that defense the year before is a role player and not starting in games. All because of kind of a personality thing
that
he had with the coaching staff. So a lot of those UCF guys were saying that he was the best player on the defense skill-wise, but they just didn't like him for whatever reason. Now, obviously, you kind of have to dig in and figure out why, but he, when you watch him, is incredibly explosive, incredibly fluid, and just easy mover on the football field, makes a ton of plays behind the line of scrimmage. The other guy is kind of a little bit similar in style, is Dalen Mack from Texas A&M.
Oh, yeah.
Who I think is kind of a very nice Patriots fit. He's built a little bit like Malcolm Brown. He's like kind of small and stubby, but he is obviously not small.
Right.
Bad word, short and stubby. And I talked to him a little bit at the combine. First of all, so at the combine, for people that don't know, there's tables and then there's podiums.
Right.
And they put the good guys on the podiums.
Right.
And they put kind of the, sleepers, whatever you want to call them, at the tables. And I go over to Dalen Mack because I think that, he's the kind of the interior defensive lineman that would interest the Patriots. And he is disrespected that he is at a table.
Oh, really?
He doesn't understand why he's not at a podium. And I thought that was great. You know, I thought that that's the kind of, he felt very disrespected by it in a kind of fiery, competitive way.
That's good.
Like his whole interview, he was just pissed that he was at a table. And I thought it was great. I think that kind of fire and stuff like that is really good. I talked to him about kind of how he wins as a player. And he just said that, he's not the tallest guy. He's 6'1". But what that allows him to do is it allows him to keep his pads down all the time. Mm-hmm. So because he's kind of short, he plays with great pad level, and he's just got a great low center of gravity, can really fire off the ball. He's another guy with a great first step, great burst and get off, all that kind of stuff. And he's kind of just an interior disruptor as well. And I love the fire. I love guys that feel disrespected, that have that kind of chip on their shoulder. If he falls, which I'm assuming, not really falls, but if he goes somewhere like early on day 3 or something like that, he's going to come into the league pissed off. You know, he's going to be like, I was at a table at the combine. They picked me in the fourth round. I'm going to prove something, you know, in my career. And I like those kind of guys.
Yeah, no, yeah. I actually remember seeing Mac quite a bit in college. He is a playmaker. You know, he might not be that tall, but you're right. His pad level helps him, and he is somebody who, coming out of high school at least, was a very highly thought of blue chip type kid. So maybe that's why.
Yes,
a little thinking like, yeah. Hey, well,
that's what? Yeah, that's another great point, is that he didn't necessarily live up to that in college.
Right.
That he was a very, very blue chip guy, like you said. And when you watch the film, you can see why. You know, you can see the power and the get off and the burst and the size and speed combination that he has. He ran a very good he had a very good speed score for those analytics people out there. About 79th percentile, I think it was. So you see why he was highly recruited. It didn't really all come together for him at A&M, but maybe in the league is where he finally puts it all together.
Yeah. Yeah, get that man a podium.
There was a couple of guys like that I really liked, and they felt flat out disrespected by the hierarchy. And to be frank, I don't know if Dalen Mack was necessarily one of those, because there was just so many great defensive linemen. You know, like, you're not about to take Nick Bosa off the podium to put Dalen Mack up there. Yeah. But there was a lot of guys that, you know, probably had some had a point.
Yeah.
As to why they were kind of the ones that weren't at the podium and stuff like that. It's a very interesting dynamic, because, you know, you go and you, especially these defensive linemen, you got Nick Bosa and Quinton Williams and Ed Oliver, and they have these huge, you know, scrums, huge crowds around them. Obviously, when Kyler Murray talked, it was like the world stopped for that 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And like, everybody's attention was just on Kyler. But then you kind of get these really intimate one-on-one situations with a lot of these other guys that no one's really interested in talking to. And whether they get picked by the Patriots or not, you kind of learn more about them, and you'll know about them whenever, you know, the Pats play that team or they come up on, you know, Sunday at some point. So it's a very cool environment. All right. I think we've babbled on for long enough for this one. You know, obviously we're very passionate about this kind of stuff, and we can keep going and going, and we will keep going and going. We have plenty of more draft shows. I'm assuming that we might take a quick pause next week, at least at the beginning of the show, if the Patriots do make a big free agent signing or some sort of move that's worthy of us talking about. No. If they pick up Henry Anderson, the defensive lineman, we can mention him quickly. If they make a big splash move, you know, Golden Tate, Adam Humphries even, then we can kind of talk about it. So I'm sure we'll do that. We're also going to talk about some of the other offseason stuff. I'm sure, of course, the offseason goes on, but we're going to be mostly draft here on the Patriots All 22 podcast. Next week, we'll get back to kind of our position by position previews. We'll look at another position on the offense. We haven't done running backs yet, and I feel like we should kind of backload when we get closer to the draft with some of the bigger positions, defensive line, quarterback, that kind of stuff. Yeah. So maybe we'll do running back next week. We talked a little bit about Miles Sanders. You mentioned Trayvon Williams. I'm sure he'll be on a lot of people's radars as well for the Patriots. Adam, you got anything else to add?
Not really. Just some, there's a coach's convention this weekend for high schools around here. So a lot of stuff going to be talked about, especially with the prospect of, rules going from NCAA to Federation in Massachusetts, not popular among coaches here. And so we're going to get some more opinions on that.
Do you think those coaches will care about the tackling law?
Yeah, they are. They all
I assume.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the ones I've talked to so far, really. Oh boy. There's a lot of crazy stuff going on in Massachusetts.
Yeah. I mean, listen, it's a sport where you're subjected to small car crashes every single time you step on the field in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
That's obviously not happening with the same kind of force at a younger age, but they are also younger. So they're smaller and stuff like that. The thing that I just hate, not to go on a whole rant about this, but the thing that I just don't like about it is that if you don't teach a kid how to tackle at a young age, and then all of a sudden they're tackling a year later, it just the fundamentals of it are, there's no way you can teach the right way. Right. And you're going to get a lot of bad tackling. And I'm not even just talking about the product or the skill of the game. I'm talking about the injuries aspect of it too, of having guys tackling with their head in there, tackling, improperly and just blowing guys up with, big shoulders or big head tackles and stuff like that. It can just get really ugly really fast. So you got to proceed with caution. I understand what they're trying to do. I understand why they're doing it. Obviously concussions and health is just so important nowadays, but it's a slippery slope because then you got, if you're not tackling your whole life and then at age 14, they're like, okay, now we're going to start hitting people.
Yeah. Then you're in trouble. And it's not like the freshmen and sophomores are only going to be hitting each other. They're going to be hitting juniors and seniors too. And you can't really just step in without having any real experience in it and expect not to have some really problematic hits.
Yeah.
So, I think the bill is very, a lot of issues with it.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's a separate podcast all in itself, I think, in that issue. But signing off until next time, for Adam Kirchen, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.